With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the fatherhood podcast. I'm Seth, a new dad, and on each episode you'll hear me and my good pal Jamie,
hello,
who's also a new dad, as we chat about everything that comes with modern day fatherhood. Along the way, you'll also get the latest highs and lows and thrills and spills as Jamie and I foray further into these unfamiliar, joyful and often choppy waters.
Choppy waters.
Choppy waters. Choppy waters. Choppy waters. Hello and welcome to episode 16 of The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the fatherhood podcast, or otherwise known as episode 1 of series 2. And you might have realised that there's been a bit of a break since series 1, if you want to call it that, ended. And that's, well, you know what, I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to bring Jamie into this because I feel like this is something we need to discuss together.
Yeah.
Hi, Jay.
Hello, mate.
I'm well, yeah.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? We're in a different setting.
We're in a different setting. We're in Jamie's house.
Yeah.
We haven't got all the fancy equipment around us.
But I think that's better.
I think it's better.
I think that was holding us back.
I feel at ease.
Yeah, okay.
I felt stressed out by the fancy equipment.
the fancy equipment that didn't work a lot of the time.
Yeah, that caused us probably more hassle than anything else.
Yeah.
Actually, that's unfair. Like, you know, we don't want to kind of diminish the role that Green Rock played in our...
And to be fair, if I was still working there, we'd probably still be using it, so...
Yeah, and also, if we had a guest, we probably wouldn't be in your living room.
That's true, yeah.
So that's one of the new things about this new series, is that we're not going to necessarily always be relying on having a guest.
Yeah. I think if we feel it's relevant,
and we
can...
We will where we can and we think it's relevant and we think it will add something. And it feels like as well, because I think the other thing that I found with, you know, when we were doing it before, you know, at first when your kids are really, you know, you've got a tiny baby,
yeah,
like things are changing like all the time. And every week, certainly every month, you know, we were recording monthly, there was something new to say. Oh, yeah, this has happened, that's happened. But after a while... It sort of slows down.
It's true.
And I was like, there isn't really much to say at this point.
I just thought you didn't really care about Eliza.
No, that's not it.
Or you just weren't present during all these developmental stages.
Well, the thing is, once they're like walking, I can't remember if she was walking when we talked.
Yeah, I reckon she was.
She was?
Yeah, it's only been like 4 months.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, she was. But that was still relatively new. But you've just had that milestone.
Today. Like, to be honest with you, she's been, I think it's, what's it called?
Cruising.
Between, like, furniture. Like, she can get around as long as there's a bit of furniture that she can, like, grab onto and rely on, that kind of thing. But today, I've seen a video, Nap took, of her walking just halfway across the living room.
Yeah.
So, big thing.
That is.
Yeah. So, you join us live.
It's quite, but I mean, it's almost like, I don't know, like it was meant to be, right? Like that's...
Yeah, it was a sign, I guess.
A sign of...
To get our asses in gear and start recording again.
Yeah, and it was like the big leap forward thing.
Yeah, I like it. I see what you've done there.
Not to overplay it too much. But
I think we've gone as far as we can take that now. The other thing we were saying before we start recording was one of the main reasons we didn't really record during the summer was because of the World Cup.
Yeah.
And
that's true. It was there was a lot of distraction.
Yeah, Love Island as well.
Love Island.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch Love Island.
You didn't watch any of it?
No, I honestly didn't watch any of it.
Wow. Okay.
I would hear people talking about it
and live in blissful ignorance.
Well, the thing is, my opinion about reality TV is that it's obviously entertaining. I mean, clearly, like the number of people that watch these things, it must be entertaining. But it's like life. I feel like life is too short to. I mean, I spend enough. You know, it's not like I don't waste time on other things. I'm on Twitter far too much. I fucking hate Twitter. But that's a new version of Twitter, yeah. And it's just pictures of tits. And I'm on fantasy football and stuff like that. I'm just messaging on WhatsApp. I waste enough time already. Yeah. I don't need another thing. And I don't doubt that I would probably enjoy it if I watched it.
I don't know. Like,
why set myself up to waste more time?
But what a summer. And it was so hot
as
well.
It was such a good summer. How was the holiday with Matilda travelling and stuff?
Well, you know, we've been to India before.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And she was really little. So she was really portable and really just like, I'll just put her in this little basket thing and she could just sleep during flight. Whereas now, obviously, she would have been coming up to a year, if not more than a year. I can't remember whether it was before or after her birthday. And she, I mean, you know what it's like. She was just being on a flight with her without her own seat and that. It's different ball game. But she was fine, like she was really good and loved going in the pool and all that kind of thing. And
We were just in the US, partly work for me, but mainly holiday. And the first part was in New York, but then we went to New Orleans. So we flew back from
you
there.
You say it very like...
I say it like that because people constantly correct you when you're there. It's not New Orleans, it's New Orleans.
New Orleans.
So you have to...
You can't not say that in an American accent.
No, I know, it's weird. You have to like affect an accent, but it just, Anyway, now you've pointed out, I feel like a dickhead. So it's like eight and a half, 9 hours back from there.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been that bad, but for the fact that Eliza managed to throw up like three times.
Ooh.
Once in the airport before we left, once just after we got on. No, twice in the airport and then once again once we'd got on. And we only just had enough clothes for Alice was wearing, like she had like a hoodie and stuff to keep her warm on the flight. That had to get shoved in a plastic bag and stuck up above in the overhead lockers. Because it was just like sick covered. We had like bags of sick covered clothes on the way back. It was not ideal. And then she kept waking, like, you know, it was a night flight as well. So she should have been fine pretty much. Like, you know, an aeroplane is quite a kind of soporific environment.
Mm.
There's a hum, you know, they dim the lights after a certain point. Like it should be the ideal situation for a baby to kind of fall asleep if it's nighttime. But I guess she's at that age where she's just like very curious about anything. Anything different is going to mean that she's like not in the mood to sleep. So she just, kept waking up. Like we were tired. We would like start to nod off, and just as you're about to nod off, she would start crying. And be like, fuck's sake! and then you live in perpetual fear that the there was a bit of turbulence, and you're like, they're going to put the seatbelt sign on, and then you have to take them out of the bassinet thing.
That's what we had. We had that on we had quite a bit of turbulence on the way there, I think, and it was a night flight. And it was really because we'd just get her to sleep, because obviously she was having to sleep on us. And then they'd be like, you know, oh no, that was it. Sorry. No, we managed on the way back there was no one sitting in a seat next to us.
Right. Yeah.
And so she had a seat to herself, like lying down on that. And it was amazing. But and then every time there's turbulence, they put the seatbelt sign on and you've got to pick her up and strap her in and all that kind of stuff. You had to deal with it on the way back, but it was just purely Alice on the way there.
On the way there, because I had to go to Boston briefly for... like purely work.
Mm.
Alice said she was like sat next to these guys who seemed like they were like actors or something like that, or a band. They were like all these really like sort of good looking like guys.
Easy.
And they were like really annoying. You could tell that they were just like,
oh really?
They didn't say anything, I don't think, but she could just tell that they were like disapproving.
Oh, fuck them, I don't care.
Yeah,
I've got to that point now, man, where it's just like, what do you want me to do? Like, what do you want me? It's a 1 year old, do you want me, or a 2 year old, whatever. And you were just like, I mean,
I guess their answer would be just don't fly. just don't go on a plane. Yeah. Don't just stay at home.
Yeah. You know, and the world
sad,
would be a better place.
Pathetic little life.
And you made this decision. Yeah,
exactly.
So what would you say is like your, if we're going to take anything away from this, is your like tip for people flying with, how old's Eliza now? Must be coming up to like...
She is a year and a half.
Yeah, coming up to two in December.
She'll be two in December, yeah.
So how, what would you say?
Don't do too many of these trips because it will take it out of you. Mm. Like if you've got to do it, it was for us, it was sort of like a family reunion thing. Alice's family, who like live in Wellington in New Zealand, came over from there. Her brother lives in New York, and that was why we were meeting in New York.
Yeah.
So it was, we kind of had to do it. So you just, you know, but if you don't have to do it, I would limit the number of long haul flights that you do.
Yeah.
Because it isn't the most fun. Like there's no getting around it. And then you've got to deal obviously with the time zone issue.
Yeah. But what were we told? We were told, keep them on English time.
What, the whole time?
Yeah. That's what we did. So, I mean, Turkey's only like
So
2 and a bit hours.
Yeah. So it's different when it's like 5 hours and or 6 hours as it was in New Orleans.
Yeah.
New Orleans, sorry.
Okay, so that, well, I heard if you're going somewhere for like, that's like an hour, 2-3 hours difference, just keep them on English time. So keep their routine of when they eat, when they bath, when they go to bed.
Yeah, that, I mean, on that, English time. That sort of makes sense. But obviously, when it gets to like five, six hours, you can't, practically speaking, you can't really do that.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't get up super early to give her breakfast in New York. Well, we could have, but then it would have
selfish.
Yeah. exactly. Well, yeah, of course, a little bit. you have to be. And like, she's adjusted quite well. Like we got back on, it's Thursday today, isn't it? And we got back on Sunday midday and it's more or less okay now.
Mm.
But the first couple of nights back, with the first night in particular was really difficult. Next night was a little bit tricky, and it sort of got sort of a bit better each time.
Yeah, but I'm like
it's
that.
Not too bad.
I'm like that.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
But the thing
and
is,
I'll let everyone know about
I think,
it as well.
Well, that's the problem is with the babies, isn't so much like I couldn't sleep,
yeah,
but I don't cry and let everybody else know about
obviously
it.
Obviously, I do.
So, okay, fine. So you would be really annoying to do that journey.
So have you met
so
me?
Don't, so my advice is don't travel with Jamie or a baby.
If it had to be one of them, baby.
Baby probably, is probably better.
Yeah, okay. I've met quite a lot of people who are becoming first-time dads.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt I was very much getting all the information I could from people. I now find myself...
giving tips to people.
Not too much, because I don't want to be that guy.
Right, yeah.
And sure. I felt there was a lot of people when I was... before I was a dad, who was that guy.
Yeah.
Who was just like, oh, well, you're going to want to do this. Or, oh, this is going to be really great when this happens. You're like, oh, shut up. I'll figure that shit out myself. And it's like, oh, no, honestly, when the baby comes, what you're going to want to do, fine, I get it. But now I have to stop myself from doing it. There's a guy at this new like place I'm working at the moment who's expecting real soon. And he keeps saying stuff and I hear him saying it in the background. He sits on my desk and I want to kind of go, oh, mate, no, that's not what you've got to do. But then I stop myself. I kind of go, actually, do you know what?
Himself.
You'll be fine. If he asks me stuff,
yeah,
fine.
But do you still consider yourself to be a new dad?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I do anymore. Mm. I don't know if I do.
Mm. Yeah, I think I do, because a year is like, a year has flown by like super quick. Did you find that?
I found like, no, yeah, the time's flying by.
Mate, it's
absolutely
crazy.
Absolutely fucking flying by.
It's like, crazy.
You can't, yeah, it's mad. That one moment they're just this little kind of bundle of, you know, just
piss
sort of,
and shit and puke and
and then they're smiling and running around and saying
being an
stuff,
absolute nightmare,
singing the ABC song, which is Eliza's favourite thing to do.
That's good though.
Yeah.
Well, all the way to.
No, it's quite funny. It's very adorable. It's like she mangles it quite badly.
Right.
But but she gets it up, like the tune all the way through.
Okay.
She sort of. I've actually got a recording of it. We might be able to insert it.
Let's do that now.
A, B. Omenope.
There were.
Have you found that, you know, all these like progressions that Eliza's made, like Nat is, and I keep saying this to her, she's like, I can't wait till she's walking. She would say it like, I can't wait till she's rolling over. And then I can't wait till she's crawling. And I can't wait till she's walking. I'm like, hang on a second. What a nightmare she is at the moment for like, life was great when you could get her, put her down on the floor, go make a cup of tea, come back, she'd be exactly where you left her.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, those days are long gone with her crawling, but like she pulled the entire desk, Nat's makeup desk, down on top of her.
Oh,
like,
God. Recently.
Yeah, it's a small desk, but what's it called? What are they called? Like a dressing table.
Okay.
She never used to do that when she just used to lie down on the floor and do nothing. And so I'm thinking, what do you think's going to happen when she can suddenly get up and run?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, but Nat seems to think that's going to make our life easier somehow. Whereas I can foresee the nightmare that it will become.
You know what? It makes some things easier and it makes some things trickier.
In what way?
Well, you don't like, you know, what you sort of said, you know, there was a time when you could kind of put them down in one room and go and make a cup of tea and come back, right? That you have to come back.
Yeah.
When they can walk, you can leave them in the room and go and make a cup of tea. And if they want something, they can get up and they can follow you in there. You don't feel like you always have to constantly check on where they are, what they're doing. I mean, you know, within reason, you know, don't go too far away, guys. Yeah. You know, she can just toddle around doing her stuff. You know, you'd keep an eye on her every so often, make sure she's not like drawing on the walls and stuff like that. But you know, as long as you're doing that, you can kind of do other stuff.
Yeah,
before it was like you couldn't really do other things.
Yeah. Speaking of just leaving him and doing, like, being able to do him, about a week after we recorded our last episode with Sarah, the first aid expert, we had a bit of an incident.
Oh.
With Matilda. That window, I'm pointing to a window here, which, I mean, it's brilliant for podcast and for an audio format, but we had a little bit of like mold and that like had developed in one of the corners.
Yeah.
So I have this fungicidal spray from my last flat,
right.
which was a basement, it used to get really moldy. And so I thought, oh, I'll just use that. So I started spraying it, wiped it down, and then had to go out real quick. And stupidly, I just put the spray down on the floor.
Right.
And left.
Okay.
And I get a phone call from Nat about 15 minutes later again. And her words were, I don't want to be that guy that tells you you're a dickhead the whole time, but you're a dickhead. And I was like, why? She said, well, you left that fungicidal spray just on the floor. You know, that the one that's got like the Hazchem, you know, logo.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. She went, I came back in the room and Matilda had it in her mouth sucking on it. I was like, okay then. And then I made the stupid mistake because I was on the phone and a bit like almost embarrassed by it. You know when you kind of get a bit defensive?
Yeah, of course.
You're going to go, oh, no, everything, it's fine. Don't worry about that. That's fine. And she went, right, so you're telling me you 100% know that she's going to be fine. And I had to say, no, I don't. I don't know that at all. She went, right, I'm taking her to the hospital. So we had to go to A&E and I had to take the bottle with me and show it to the people there.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah, but she was fine. She looked fine. She wasn't like crying or anything like that. And we don't think she sprayed it, like had the strength to like do the kind of spray thing into her mouth. So basically we got this advice from one of Nat's friends who's like works in the, like as a pediatrician.
Yeah.
And she said, if this happens, take them straight to A&E and take the bottle with you. So the doctor can just take the bottle, look it up, look at all the active ingredients and all that kind of thing, rather than you going, well, it was this brand of fungicidal spray and whatever. So they looked it up and they said basically it would have to be like over something like 11% of the active ingredient to be corrosive.
Right.
But what was actually, it was like 0.7% in it was, and she would have to drink a shit ton of it. Whereas she probably would have, if she got any in her mouth, it would have been like a drop of it.
Yeah.
So they were like, she's totally fine. So don't stress it, you can take it home, sort of thing. That was a scary moment.
I can imagine.
And since then, I've nearly killed her again.
Oh my God.
I let her, we've got a changing table, which is like a chest of drawers, and it's about, what, like, between nipple and navel height for me.
Okay.
And I'm 6'5".
That's high,
and that's her changing table. And I went to put a nappy in the bin. Usually I put my hand on her if I move away just to kind of like stop her from rolling over. And I was doing it and I couldn't do it with one hand. So I quickly just did it with two hands. And as I did that, I heard this, and I was like, eh? And I looked around and Matty's no longer on the top of this thing. Oh, and I looked down and she's just on the floor. Height wise, that's like me falling out of a first story window for her. And she cried a lot, but nothing. But this is the annoying thing. Nat had gone to a festival. Nat had gone to Latitude Festival for a hen do. And it was about 45 minutes before she walked in the door that whole weekend. I was like, if I've broken Matilda after having a whole weekend of her to myself, 45 minutes before she walked into the door, that'd be the most annoying thing.
That's the worst.
I mean, so close.
So close. So to close. Being like, yeah,
what?
Dad.
What? What?
And you almost ruined the whole thing.
No, I had to tell Nat about it. So this isn't how Nat finds out about this. She knows. But yeah, so since we last recorded, I've nearly killed
her. But she's fine, though.
She's totally fine. Obviously. She didn't break anything.
They dropped... I mean, that's... I remember, like, it was quite a long time before we, like, you know, dropped Eliza, or Eliza fell over badly our watch, I think. Like, but it's happened a few times recently. I actually clunked her... Where was it? We were going through... Oh, we were in a hotel in... New Orleans. And she was toddling along, and there were these big, like, heavy glass doors.
Yeah.
And I was the first person to get, like, there was a few of us, Alice's brother, parents, and we got to the door, and I kind of was looking around to see where Eliza, she was there, and I actually had deliberately looked around to see where she was. And I kind of looked around and I couldn't see her there. So I was like, oh, she must be behind. So I went like that. And then she'd walked around to the other side of me. So I just pulled the door open, like, right in her face. And she just fell out. Obviously, like, she was fine.
Yeah.
But she cried a bit. And that day, she'd also just fallen off something else, like banged her head on something. So, Jamie, you last week went to have a chat with an author, James Miller.
Mm.
Who's written a book about parenting.
Yeah, it's called Dads Don't Babysit, Towards Equal Parenting.
Awesome. So let's have a little listen to that.
Okay.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yes, thank you, Seth. Thank you, Jamie. I am indeed here and delighted to say that I'm sat with James Miller. James is a political journalist for publications such as The New Statesman and The Times, as well as an author and, most importantly, a father. His first book, The Gender Agenda, written with his partner, Ros Ball, tackled gender stereotypes and explored how boys and girls are raised differently. And James has a new book coming out called Dads Don't Babysit, which makes him a perfect guest for us on The Good, The Dad and The Ugly. Hello, James.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
No problem. How are you?
I'm all right.
We've just been talking about the echo in here.
Yeah.
Pretty severe.
But yeah.
I hope everyone gets used to it. Gets used to it. Gets used to it. Gets used to it. Gets used to it.
The gender agenda started because I had children, basically. I had a daughter and then we had a son. And we noticed when the son was born that people seem to treat him a bit differently. We got different sorts of toys. I mean, not just the obvious pink and blue stuff, but also the toys. I mean, the one we always talk about is that our daughter was given a little white fluffy teddy bear with a pink hat, and our son got given a knitted dinosaur. You know, you go, oh, hang on, something's, they're still babies. They're basically both the same, especially when they're born. There's really not a lot of difference going on here. There's something funny here. We went to the Panto, and it was one of our nephews went to pick up, you know, one of these god-awful flashing things that they give out at Pantos. I was going to say these days, sending terribly old-fashioned, because Pantos were great when I was a kid. No, they weren't. And the woman behind the desk said, oh, I'll get you one in blue, because he picked up a pink one. You know, as if, why would you, you can't have a pink one because you're a boy. Why not? So that was how the gender agenda started, or the gender diaries, the Twitter account, that gender diary. And all these people piled in, and then after a couple of years, we sort of moved on to become a book. But around the same time, a fellow called David Freed got in touch with me and said, oh yeah, I like that. I started doing shared parental leave. Must have been about the time shared parental leave was being introduced. We were sort of talking about it on the Twitter account. So I met him for a coffee and said, do you want to do a book? Because I'm like too lazy to write a book on my own. I just can't do it. And he was like, yeah, let's. So hence we then moved on to this idea of, his blog's called Dad's Turn. The idea that men should do more parenting, and why aren't they doing more parenting, and all this sort of stuff. And the thing we had in common was babysitting. We'd both been out. I've been out with my kids. I remember I was in Marks and Spencer's in Bromley, glamorous outing for the kids. And you know, middle-aged lady in a grey uniform, you know, cuddly Marks and Spencer's lady said, "You're babysitting for the afternoon."
Oh, it drives me insane.
And I was just like. Of course, I didn't say anything. I went, you're just a Marks and Spencer's lady, you can't like.
See, I would have said, I would have said something.
But I was just like, you know, no, of course I'm not babysitting. I'm parenting. I'm looking at you cannot babysit your own children. We say in the first few pages of this book, the definition of babysitting is you're looking after someone else's children for a temporary period of time.
Yeah.
Your own children, you're supposed to look after all the time. Yeah. Like, that's the whole thing, right? That's what being a parent means. But one of the other things that sort of triggered it was I went part-time in 2014 at the time I was employed. And the reaction was just weird. It was all, especially as you say, in Westminster, you know, a place where ambition is all, both amongst journalists and the politicians. And lots of people sort of said to me, why have you done that? What are you doing? You know, why would you go part-time? It's like, well, do you know what? I'm better at looking after the kids than my partner. She likes being out of work. She goes mad if she's left at home. She doesn't like the fact that she's constrained.
Okay.
You know, that it's actually society saying, you're the woman, you'll do the most of the childcare. So I'm going to go part-time. Makes sense. And she's going to go full-time. Mm. And our lives were transformed at that point. She was happier. I was happier.
Really? You found that was it kind of had a positive effect?
And, you know, when I'm now writing a book saying everybody should do what I did, because I didn't do it for whatever, the first 7 years of my daughter's life. Because we were victims of this weird societal thing that man goes out to work.
Yeah.
Even if men go part-time on, you know, or do flexible working. The book is about what needs to change in terms of both policy and the flexible working stuff and the cultural stuff and what we need to change to allow men to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
The thing. All the surveys show that men want to spend more time with their family and they're willing to give up money to do it.
Mm.
And all the practice shows that men still do more hours, tend to work full time and are miserable, a lot of them. I mean, you know, we all know there's the stuff about male mental health. There are issues there. I appreciate they're complicated, but you know, there's what we call the paternity gap. There's a gap between what men say they want and what is actually happening. Why is that, and how can we fix it? Just for example, when your kids are at school and they get sick, the school will phone the mum. Even my co-author, Dave Freed, he's had this with the nursery. Even though he's filled in the forms, put himself as contact number one.
Right.
They will phone, go straight to his wife, who is out at work 5 days a week, going, no, I'm in a high-powered meeting, bog off and phone the dad.
Yeah.
But there's just this thing of the mum is the one to call. And it's all those little cues. But of course, it does come out of the gender agenda, which was about the cues we give children to be boys or be girls, what that means.
Yeah, right.
There are
so that's
cues about what being a dad means.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that somehow you are weird. Mm. Of course, people don't want to be weird. And men that do more than the normal amount of childcare are often regarded as great and get loads of praise. But, you know, what I'm doing is nothing compared to what most women do. Yeah. And yet you do something slightly different, you get called a hero.
Yeah.
We spoke to Chris Mason for the book of Off the Telly. He does BBC Breakfast sometimes. Mm-hmm. He's a political correspondent for the BBC. And he said the fact that we were sitting, I'm talking to him about the fact he did shared parental leave, and he did 2 months, and his partner did 10 months, just points to the fact that what he did really wasn't very much, and yet it's regarded as revolutionary. Mm. It shows how far we are from equal parenting, which is the subtitle of the book, What We're Trying to Get To.
So that's your new book. That's the new book that's sitting in front of us right now. But let's talk about, I mean, because I find the whole idea we spoke about the whole, how it's ingrained in our kids, because I'm quite, I guess, wary of it through doing this podcast and through talking to other dads, and a lot of my friends, I'd say, are quite interested in keeping it gender, keeping the toys and the things that, like, not gender neutral, I think that's the wrong word, because fine,
gender,
like, because
a hopeless term, we found that, because you can't do it.
Right, okay. Why is that?
Because even if you, for some, lived in an egg for 4 years, raised your child, no access to TV adverts or indeed any outside world, you know, or their grandparents, because their grandparents are likely to have gender expectations of one sort or another. Even if you are somehow amazingly gender neutral, they will then put on the telly and watch flipping Daddy Pig, my nemesis.
Why is that? Why is that? Well, he's just a better father than you, is that what it is? Or?
No, he's we had a big argument with my co-author about, I wanted to call a section Death to Daddy Pig.
Okay, wow.
He thought that was too strong.
Well, we could start a section on here.
Having just got a hold of the copies of the book, actually, he won. I thought I'd won that one, but apparently not.
Right, okay.
But I didn't slip the phrase Death to Daddy Pig in.
Okay.
Because he's a buffoon of a father.
Yeah.
You know, he is a terrible, it's a classic, dads, they're funny and stupid, aren't they? Mum has to come and tidy things up. And that's why gender becomes really strong in kids, because at that age, part of it is this society says gender's important. So they go, oh, gender must be important. It must be important that I'm a boy or a girl. Certainly not, you're like 2 or 3. You know, it probably gets important when you get to university, but not for any learning reason. But it's not really when you're a kid. But they see the stuff on telly and that feeds into it. Of course, they see that they talk to their grandparents. And, you know, there's a payoff, obviously. You know, the benefit of being close to your grandparents is far outweighs the occasional comments that are a bit out of date. But they still pick it up. They say, well, this person is important to me. And they say, they always call it Daddy's car.
Yeah.
Daddy's car, it's just the car. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the grandparents will sort of say things like that. And they go, oh, hang on, so daddies and cars go together. Right, okay.
Yeah.
The book that inspired all this, Marianne Grabber, because there's a good girl. The little girl sees, she's 3, and she's watching telly, and she manages to say, was it man big or something, woman naked. What she picked up is men are sort of big and important, women are generally naked, and it's to do with how they look. And of course, that's the 80s. Things have moved on a bit.
Unless you watch Game of Thrones.
But, well, yeah, exactly. Or if you just look at the side of a bus, you know, all the film posters will have a terrible habit at the moment of films with like 4 characters and they're 3 men and 1 woman. And it's just, you know, again, kids see that and go, well, there's more men than women. You know, they see this stuff and soak it up and they're trying to make sense of the world. And not, obviously, they're not super brains, but to some extent they are, because they have to process an awful lot and they figure it out and it all becomes, right, I'm a girl, what does that mean? I'm a boy, what does that mean? And of course, you know, the gender roles are reinforced. Why would anybody want to put limits on their children, right? And yet we do, you know, straight off the bat. And I think I'm as guilty as, well, I'm not as guilty as anybody else, because I've written 2 books about it. But I am guilty, you know, I'm still on that, very much on that sliding scale of being guilty of it. I think that was the big one, and that's sort of kind of where Dads Don't Babysit has come from as well, is that I've got increasingly interested in this idea of masculinity.
Well, clearly it seems like there's a natural progression from your first book of looking at how, you know, the gender stereotypes apply to children and the way they're raised to how they apply to the parents and you know, within society and that sort of thing. So this is brand new, your book.
Yes.
What made you kind of go, do you know what, I'm just going to keep keep going with this, keep going with this idea and progressing it and looking at parents rather than going, I'm going to do a book on politics?
Well, I think it's partly to do with that thing of when I went part-time, and then not long after that, shared parental leave came in. And I was like, God, if we'd had that when we had kids, that would have been amazing. That would have made life very different. But my sort of interest in shared parental leave, I missed out on it, and how it could be transformative in the role that men and dads play. And that feeds back into the gender agenda stuff, because you've got this issue of boys and girls get their ideas about gender roles from the home. Mm. So if men are doing more parenting and doing more housework, and childcare comes down to domestic work, they will have a more equal outlook. I mean, this has been shown by sort of research. If boys and girls see men doing domestic work, they will do domestic work when they're older and tend to have a more gender-neutral outlook. Men live longer if they do more parenting. It's like, look, okay, maybe you hate your children and you don't want to do it. You'll live longer. If you're that selfish, you'll live longer. So just do it, all right? You know, it's better for mental health. As I say, there are issues around male mental health. And it's good for the economy, actually.
In what way?
If we had a more equal shared parental leave system, you get women back into the workplace quicker, who are happier and more productive. It's the radio ad effect, that people are happier, fitter, happier and more productive.
Yeah.
Men and women. And it's like, there's a 5% jump in GDP if you have a split down the middle shared parental leave system.
That's amazing, really. That's...
And that is 5% of GDP. Yeah, it pays for itself very quickly.
Yeah, totally.
It's a big commitment, obviously, for a government to turn around and say, right, we're going to do this properly.
Yeah.
It's like, if you are a man and you spend more time with your children, you know, with anybody, you'll get to know them better, and
you might find out you don't like your children all that much.
Well, that's possible, yeah. I mean, I think it's quite, I suppose it is possible, yeah. But you see, that's a very dad thing.
That's another part
of the solution, actually, is for men to talk about parenthood in a good way, to say it's fun, it's nice, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, when you cuddle your children, it's lovely.
Yeah.
Not just go, my wife doesn't have sex with me anymore. You know, it's like, yeah, brilliant, well done. There's a lot of banter around fatherhood and parenthood. That's okay. The trouble is, the conversation tends to stop at banter. And what we actually need is men to sort of talk about, it's, you know, I did shared parental leave and I had a nice time with my baby. I went part-time and I had a great time with my son.
Yeah.
Brilliant. As we say in this book, we are the same, you know, both me and David. We're not built to gush emotion about being a parent because we're raised as men, because that's what we're told. Big boys don't cry and all this sort of stuff.
Well, that was kind of the point of doing this podcast, to be honest with you. It's just kind of like have guys come in and, well, just for, it's almost a cathartic thing for ourselves to be able to get together with mates and chat about what it's like to be a dad, you know, because it's...
Exactly, and people listen to it, right?
I mean, I'd hope so.
That's the whole point, isn't
it? Yeah.
It's that, again, it's that paternity gap. It's that thing of, when you're sitting with a group of men, you sort of, to be the one to sit there and go, my daughter couldn't get sleep last night, so I had to get in bed with her and stroke her hair, and it was really nice, and I liked it. You know, all the other men, what are they going to go? They're just going to sit and look at the football on the telly in the pub on the telly, and they're going to go, what the hell?
Yeah.
But it's okay to do that stuff. Or if you don't want to do the emotional stuff, do the practical stuff. I mean, I've done this since writing the book. A guy I know, I said, you know, I'm gonna have a baby. Obviously, his partner's going to have a baby. And one of the first things I said was, are you doing shared parental leave? And he said, I don't know, I've really thought about it.
Yeah.
I was like, right, well, here's what you're entitled to. Here's why it's a good thing. You know, I said to him, you know, the biggest indicator of your child's future educational well-being is if they have better paternal involvement. And he's doing 2 months of shared parental leave.
That's good.
You know, that's better than nothing. You know, he hadn't thought about it. He's doing 2 months. Brilliant. You know, you can just do the if you want to do the man thing and just do the practical stuff, fine, do that. But talk about it is one of the big things.
Thank you so much. This has been really fascinating. And once again, the book, Dads Don't Babysit, Towards Equal Parenting by David Fried and James Miller, is out mid-September. So by the time this is out, it should be available. So go cop that.
Yes, please do.
Thank you so much. Have you found yourself giving, I know we spoke about, you know, do you see yourself as a new dad, and like still as a new dad, but do you find, what kind of advice do you find yourself giving to people who might, do you know what I mean? Like, if you know someone who's going to be a dad for the first time,
yeah,
is there one piece of thing, one piece of advice you always would go to, do you think?
Well, I actually don't know anyone who...
Oh, really?
Not anyone who's going to become a dad.
Right.
Like, I either know dads,
yeah,
or I know people, yeah, so I know, like, you, obviously, me, with a child.
Hello.
I know other people with children who are having another one.
I'm basically segueing here.
Okay.
Into dad tech.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I always find myself saying that if you had to buy two essentials, like when becoming a dad, a parent for the first time.
Yeah.
Obviously, aside from like a cot, a pram, blah, 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 you know, there's a billion of them, different ones you can get. They all pretty much do the same thing. Whatever, you'll make your choice based on your situation, whatever, cool. I would say the two things that made our life easier, and one of them still does, and that's what I'm going to talk about dad tech. But the first one was the sleepy head.
Okay.
Did
yes.
you have one?
Yeah, yeah, we had a sleepy head.
And the amount of people who don't know about it.
Really?
Yeah. Like this guy at work, basically, didn't really know about it. Next day, looked it up, bought one. And was just like, yes. It's like an all-in-one kind of sleeping mattress pillow.
Yeah, it's thing. Like a little, like horseshoe
cocoon type thing.
Thing, yeah.
And you can put your baby in there and basically have them in a, like you can have them on the sofa, or they sleep in it in their bed, or you can have them on the, we used to put on the kitchen table, like the dinner table.
Yeah.
And while we're eating.
Basically, yeah, you can put them anywhere.
You can put them anywhere and they won't roll out, basically, because yeah. it's got like this horseshoe of like cushions around it. So I would say that. But the second thing I'm going to say, which we got recommended, and I think we might have talked about in the very first episode that we did, was the You and the Sheep. To give it its full name is the Ewan the Dream Sheep. We call ours Renton.
Renton?
Yeah.
Okay.
For Ewan McGregor's character in Trainspotting. And basically what it does, it's like a sleeping aid for babies. And Matilda's had this from day one, basically.
Yeah.
And what they say is that if your little one struggles to sleep at night, Ewan the Dream Sheep is here to help. Multi-award-winning, super cute, cuddly Ewan mimics the comfort of the womb with a selection of soothing sounds, including actual recordings of womb and heartbeat, combined with a warm, pink, calming glow to lull your newborn or toddler into a peaceful slumber. And basically, it's a little cuddly toy sheep, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, and four legs, as most sheep do have. And when you press one of them...
Here this is listen. What we're learning every time.
Yeah, yeah.
Guys.
Every day is a school day. Listen. Oh, this is the womb, and this is the one that Matilda loves. And then when you press one of them, his belly lights up like this pink glow to mimic the womb, of being like in the womb with this like red glow. So you got that, and then plays a little. We never use this one. That's just annoying.
Yeah.
That's a bit annoying. And then this
I can't
one.
Imagine there are any babies that actually
like
that one.
Yeah.
And more than the other ones.
Yeah, right. And then you've got this one. No, that's rain.
That's rain. So what was the other one then?
Vacuum cleaner.
Oh, it was vacuum cleaner.
And that stays on for about half an hour, I think. So they go to sleep, and then the amount of times we walked into Matilda's bedroom and she's just face right up against
really?
It. Like right up against the red light. Yeah, loves it. So this is Sweet. It's by Sweet Dreams. It's called You and the Dream Sheep, and it's $29.99. And I genuinely think, I mean, as I said, all babies are different, but that's, I would say, my number one, along with the sleepy head. That's my number one.
Fair enough.
Bit of dad tech.
Recently, we've been going through a bit of a period where mum is definitely favourite.
Right.
And like, you know, sometimes, you know, in the morning, this morning, like she came, she, you know, what we our routine when she wakes up is that one of us will get up and prepare a bottle and then go in and then bring her into our bed, and she'll have a bottle in our bed. And last few mornings she's been pretty cute, and like, you know, this morning she gave mum a cuddle, and mum was like, and give dad a cuddle, and she like looked at me and she smiled, and then she jumped on me, and I was like, oh. But like that, like when she's crying, when she's like upset, quite a lot at the time now, if I go to comfort her, she's like, no, no, no. And she starts like flapping her arms around. She's like, get away. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what's the matter with her. She's completely mad. And then Alice will come in and she'll just settle down.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, for fuck's sake, yeah, man, yeah, yeah. What am I doing wrong here?
Yeah, yeah. It's just
But that's all part of the, maybe that is part of the manipulation of like, she knows that she can kind of divide and conquer.
Totally. I truly believe that. Mate, she's got you, and Matilda will have us very soon. No, but
she hasn't, though, you see. Well, it's great. It's like, oh, sorry, Alice, you're going to have to. I'm just like, sweet. So, you know, jokes on them, guys.
The football's on, so if you can just...
Yeah, just time it.
Turn it down a little bit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just like give her a little kick right before the football's on. Oh, you're going to have to... No.
Well, you don't want daddy? Oh, weird.
Of course I would never do that.
No, of course.
One of the things that we did before this latest recording is we put a little tweet out asking people for, to give us their questions and stuff.
We kind of said what was people's biggest like concern or worry before when they were becoming a dad.
And one of the ones we got was from FC Bald Fraud, which is at JRubes on Twitter, _Rubes, I should say. And he said that the three for him were childbirth / labour complications, his wife potentially getting postnatal depression, and would he be good enough as a father, which I think are all pretty
common. Yeah, I think that was
common.
There was quite a few other tweets kind of saying the same sort of thing.
And which is obviously like really like important. And
yeah.
But we'd actually cover that quite extensively in episode nine with Mark Harris.
Yeah, episode 9, Mark Harris, is well worth a listen because he's a midwife and he gave some really good advice on how guys can be more involved.
Yeah.
And actually he's written a book called Men, Love and Birth, which I read when Nat was pregnant. And it's basically a book about being present at the birth of your, at the birth of your child and being the person that you're pregnant missus want like needs you to be in that in that environment. But it kind of is a lot of other stuff. I mean, it's such an important thing for guys to discuss because you know guys can suffer from postnatal depression as well, and you know the whole thing of like bottling up the way they're feeling and feeling like they don't have a voice and we can't talk about how we're feeling because it's all on the mum, which is true to you know a certain extent. But you know you're a parent and you're involved in it, so you know
I feel like, but sometimes isn't it like the most helpful thing isn't being told by an expert what you should think or what you should do, but just hearing other people who might have had similar experiences similar thoughts, just you know articulate those because sometimes it's all you need is just to feel like you're not the only person who feels like that.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. And just hearing that other people are going through it. And hopefully with this podcast, we can kind of build a bit of a community and people can, you know, hopefully keep tweeting in at Good Dad Ugly or get in touch with us on Facebook at Good Dad Ugly as well.
Maybe we should say, like, you know, if, you know, we said at the top of this that we weren't going to be so focused on, like, well, we need to have a guest. But, like, we also said that we want to have guests on who have something to say, something interesting to kind of contribute. And I guess, like, maybe, you know, if there are people out there who live in or around London or maybe not further afield, but if you can get to London and you feel like you've actually got something, you could contribute something really interesting, like, feel free to get in touch.
Definitely.
We'll wrap it up there, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please keep sharing and liking and downloading and rating.
And reviewing.
We saw actually today, despite the fact that we haven't actually done this for ages, that we're still in the top 100 kids and family and kids podcasts on iTunes, which is quite good, really.
Yeah.
I was surprised by that. I thought we'd really slipped
out of the record. So you're doing it. So keep doing that. Tell your friends.
And we'll come back with more.
Yes. 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 Yes.
The good, the dad, and the ugly.
Okay, so that's it for this most recent episode of The Good, the Dad, and the Ugly, the fatherhood podcast. Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up. Okay, well then let's wrap it up there. Well, I think that probably about wraps up the conversation for today. Okay, that's it for this episode. So thank you everyone. We're gonna wrap it up there.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.